Welcome to the Fitness Canter Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Feigl. I'll be bringing you the truth about exercise by interviewing fitness professionals, exercise science professors and researchers, as well as fitness industry entrepreneurs and leaders. Hopefully you take this info and apply it to have a better, healthier, and happier lifestyle. Thanks and enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Fitness Canter Podcast. I'm joined today with Tyler McCarthy. He is a personal trainer in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Runs his own training company called Titanium Performance, and we were linked up through the Strength Performance Network. So I'm happy to have him on the show today. He's got a lot of my same values in terms of exercise, strength training, how to take care of a client. So I think a lot of people are going to take some good things away from this phone call. So Tyler, thanks for joining us today, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. I really appreciate it as well.
Absolutely. So give us a little bit of background about how you got into the fitness industry, and then we can go from there.
Okay. Yeah, I've always kind of been interested in sports and fitness, and, you know, since high school, I'm playing football and all of that stuff. Well, when I went to school, I started in athletic training, and I kind of got away from that because I didn't want to work on the back end of working with people that have already been injured. I decided that I would rather work on the front end and let's prevent injury the best that we can and prepare people by strengthening the raw materials, being their musculature, and get them ready for the sport that they're ready to play. So I had a big focus on sports initially, and that kind of changed, which we'll kind of get into, I'm sure, a little bit later on here. So I went to the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire, and I graduated with a degree in movement science, is basically a human performance degree, and a minor in business management. From there, I got a job at a Bally Total Fitness, and I didn't really like how college was so driven by the NSCA approach. It was really kind of one-sided, I feel, now that I've explored multiple different ways of strength training. Getting into Bally's, when I had my first clients, I remember walking into the room and my personal training manager saying, "Now put them through a full hour workout." And that's when it kind of hit me that college didn't really teach me how to train anybody. So programming wasn't, I don't know, I just felt not prepared for that. So as I started my workout and everything, I put them through what they thought was a great workout. And then I kind of, 6 months in, sat down and I was like, okay, I'm doing the same things. I'm looking at other trainers and I'm just kind of copying what they do. And then I started reading the NSCA journals and not knowing how to kind of sift through bias and look for different qualities that I could use in my workouts. So I was very blind in how to do research. And I'll kind of get back to that in a minute here as well. But I was putting people through workouts and things, and I just wasn't progressing. I didn't feel professionally. I wasn't getting any better at what I was doing. I didn't want to stay in that environment. I didn't have the resources to kind of push me to learn more and progress professionally. So I researched a few companies, and I found a company called Discover Strength that Luke Carlson runs over in Plymouth, Minnesota here, not too far away from me. I applied there and I happened to get a job. And one of the funny things is, Eric, we were kind of talking about before, I walked in and I heard all this counting and I was like, what the heck is going on here? Like,
right.
Why is there so much counting down from 10 seconds or 20 seconds? I just did not understand what was going on. So anyways, I did the interview. It was a beautiful studio. Now I understand the history of Hammer Strength, MedX, and Nautilus, Arthur Jones, all of the great history behind the style of training that
right.
we prefer, the high-intensity strength training.
Pioneers.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. The history of it is just, it's what makes it so special. So anyways, I got a job at Discover Strength, and they have just a wonderful program to kind of get their trainers up to speed, and it takes it in specific steps to kind of get you ready to program for clients. And that's exactly what I was looking for. Because my first job, like I said, I was just thrown into a room and said, train these people. But Luke and the team over at Discover Strength do an amazing job getting trainers ready to take on clients. And they want consistency because clients don't work specifically with one trainer. They need consistency across the board so that clients can work with each trainer in the facility. And then when I got to the point where I was training there, we'd have weekly meetings and we'd go over research. And I just loved that because Luke and the team there, they all value education. It's one of their core values and it's one of the things that they really, really strive and thrive on. So it taught me a few things over the few years that I was there. It taught me how to sift through bias. So all those NSCA journals that I was reading in the past, it taught me how to find little things, pick them out, use them in my workouts. And that's what you got to do. You can't take the whole study, even if it's a high intensity article or a research study. You got to find little things that you can apply to who you are and the programming that you do. And Luke did a very good job of teaching us how to do that. And I kind of carried that on into what I do now. And I still stay in contact with Discover Strength and their amazing people over there. I just wanted to kind of separate and spread the word about high-intensity strength training because, like I was saying about the NSCA kind of and the ACSM as well, kind of running college programming and study, it's... I think we had a one-week class that went over high-intensity strength training, so it was a very minimal portion of the entire 4 years that I was at school for that. So I remember being like, oh, this hurts. I don't really like this style of training. It's hard, you know? So
yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah, oh yeah. But the now understanding it, the safety of it and the efficiency and the effectiveness, it's all right there, and it's top-notch. Compared to, I mean, you get the same exact results, and I will say, if not better. There's another thing that Luke did a very good job drilling into my head that we don't want to ever say better because the burden of proof is then on us, and that goes back to research. So anything for any of you trainers out there, when you're saying things, be very careful that you have research to kind of back you up, and that's one of my values is that I make sure that I don't use my opinion in things. I like to make sure that I have a research study to kind of send over to a client or another trainer if they have a question on any of that stuff. And that kind of brings us to today. I've run my business for 3 years now, going on three in April, and I have my first employee. He's doing an awesome job, Joe Hoffmeister. He's amazing, and I kind of took how Discover Strength trained me in and took the time to really get him up to speed. And he's been training clients that have worked with me for 3 years, and they're all saying just wonderful things about him and that there's the consistencies right there. So I thank Luke and the team at Discover Strength for me being where I am right now, definitely.
Well, we're not anything if we don't have a team behind us, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the whole point. You and I talked about there's no point in learning everything if we're not going to share it. So
right.
That's awesome. I want to go back to something you said earlier about being thrown into your first workout. Because I was in a similar situation when I first started training in college. I remember the trainer that was kind of overseeing the situation. It really wasn't even a great workout that I gave. I remember I had somebody in a leg extension, and he walks up and he's like, "What do you think's functional about that?" Because he wasn't big into machines.
Oh,
I looked at him. I was like, it's functionally working the quadriceps.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't really get where he was going, but he figured everything that was quote unquote functional had to be done off of machines and, you know, not on a padded seat, and it just,
right.
When you started talking about that, it kind of rang a bell.
Right. It definitely, like I was saying, I love the word functional. And by love, I mean I absolutely hate. Because
right, me too.
You're right. I mean, what is functional? I don't understand, like we were talking about the other day, if you're doing lunges with a bicep curl and a press at the bottom, what is functional about that? Do you lunge down the street with your can of soup in your hand, bicep curling it and pressing it. No, I mean, what we want to do is get these people ready, whether they're weekend warriors, elite athletes, or just the average person. We want to get them ready for life. Like, I want to make sure my 80-year-old woman can go to the back of her car and pull groceries out without straining her back, or, you know, and that's functional to me, because we're strength training the raw materials. We're getting them ready for whatever their life throws at them. And I think that's what functional, if we had to define it, would mean to me.
Yeah, I completely agree. Another thing you said in school was that you have to explain a little bit. You said you learned about high intensity training.
It was actually in the NSCA book. It's the CSCS Part 1 book is what we used. So it was in there, I believe, maybe two paragraphs. They talked about Arthur Jones. I think his name appeared one time, and that was about it. And I think I said a week, but I think I'm giving them too much credit. I'm pretty sure we spent a day. And then when we went in on that Friday to do all the exercises we learned, we did, I remember it was a lat pull down, and we did kind of an 8-8 kind of count. And man, it burned so bad. And I looked at all my football buddies and I said, this is dumb. Why are we doing it this way? Let's go power clean and squat and stuff. That's way more fun than this. So yeah, that's the first time I kind of touched on it. And then kind of when I got to Bally's, I forgot to touch on this. I remember reading in all places, actually, it was in a men's health magazine. Like I said, I did not know where to get my research or my articles or anything from at that moment. Right. But I read in there, they talked about concentration reps, and they like coined the term and coined this style of training, basically, that they just pulled it out of the blue and it's this new amazing thing, when obviously we know it's been around for, you know, 50 years now. So I would do my normal workout, traditional, you know, three sets or whatever and blah, blah, blah. I would then, in the end of the workout, I would throw in three or four different exercises and do 8-8 counts and go to fatigue. And I remember one of the things in that article talked about recovery, and I was overtraining like crazy. I didn't even realize that I was overtraining. And when I started actually taking days off, I started to grow. And so it wasn't the style of training that made me get bigger. It was more so the back end of, now I'm doing these 8-8 counts, or concentration reps as they call them, and I'm making myself recover. And we know that with, you know, Arthur Jones flying the bodybuilders down and, you know, having them rest for 3 days. They have to sleep in a hotel for the next 3 days, and just at that point, then we're going to do our measurements and all of that stuff. And they were growing at that point just because they stopped training for a little while and they actually let their muscles fully recover.
Right.
And we see that so much. I mean, I work out of a gym and it's an amazing gym. I love where I'm at. But a lot of these guys overtrain and they don't realize that how important recovery really is. There's a such thing as an active rest day, where they had their back and shoulder day or whatever on Friday, and then they're doing a million push-ups and all these other crazy shoulder exercises on their active recovery day a day later. Well,
right,
they're just tearing that same tissue back down and over the long term atrophying, you know?
Yeah. Well, to go back to it, and we talked a little bit about this too, all it is you're sending signals.
Right.
Right? I mean, your muscles you were sending the signal to your muscle, to the overload signal. And if you're not letting it receive that signal on an actual rest day, then it doesn't know what it needs to do. It needs to repair. It doesn't know it needs to grow. So, I think there's a mentality of, and you and I both deal with it, there's more, you want to do more, 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 more. You hear clients say that. You know, tomorrow, what should I do tomorrow after this? Nothing. Like, you need to, you know, go relax. Ahead and enjoy your day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just live your life. Like, don't feel like you have to do. And then the people who don't take that to heart, they come in and they have nagging elbow injuries. They have nagging shoulder injuries, knee issues. So a lot to be said for taking an actual rest day.
I definitely agree with you.
So, going into that, how do you prevent people from being injured when they're, you know, in these high intensity situations?
Well, so the style itself, I mean, decreasing momentum is just huge in itself right there. Because if I know in Gary Bannister's book, If you like exercise, chances are you're doing it wrong.
That's such an awesome book.
Yeah, it's an amazing book.
Awesome
they have a graph in there showing a guy doing, and an excellent job explaining it too, but they have a guy doing standing overhead press, and they talk about him moving it forcefully, using momentum, and at that point your muscles aren't really doing anything, and they talk about having a 100-pound bar. And then as he's throwing that weight in the air, the weight can increase up to 3 times the amount. So your joints then have to catch 300 pounds, up to 300 pounds. And they weren't made for that. If you move the weight in a slow manner, your external force production, and that's what he's kind of talking about at that point. So there's that baseline running across, and as this guy's throwing the weight up, you got spikes up and down like crazy on that external force production graph. And then he shows a guy that's moving it at a 2-4 count or something similar to that, where there's just decreasing to trying to eliminate momentum, and you're trying to keep that force production across that zero line, that baseline, as much as possible, because your joints are made and they can handle that, because you were able to move the resistance through that using your musculature, not momentum. In the first example, he's using momentum, not his musculature, to do anything. So with my clients, I really stress eliminating momentum. We're very, very strict. We don't really necessarily care if you're on a 2-4 count or a 10-10 or whatever it may be. As long as there's no momentum, the safety is there. Now, do I use like 2-4, 10-10, 30-30-30, all of these different things? Yeah, but that's just as a mental thing to kind of keep these people a little interested and switch it up a little bit for them, because we all know that you get the same effect, and it's all about intensity or the amount of effort at the end of the set that they put in. And that's, it doesn't matter what the count necessarily is. It's all about what the amount of effort they output at the end of the set. So that's kind of how we really focus on making sure our clients are safe. It's just trying to keep, I always have that picture in my head of that graph as I'm training people, to make sure we keep that external force production as minimal, as close to zero as possible.
Yeah, and that's just smart training, right? You reduce the amount of work that your actual skeletal system has to go through, and put more of the load on the muscular system, and it keeps the skeletal system safe also. How does all of that come together and actually increase strength based on what you just told us?
Well, I mean, you can kind of talk about Henneman size principle at that point then, because we'll start with, and I go through all of this with new intro clients especially, because I like to put them through a workout so they can actually feel, and then I explain this principle. So when you start your first rep, you kind of pick a weight that hopefully you get in between 8 and 12 reps if we're moving at about a 2-4 count. So we start with our easily to excite slow twitch fibers. So we're going to fatigue them. It's going to take a few reps because they have to understand that slow twitch doesn't mean that you're moving slow, and fast twitch doesn't mean that you're moving fast. It's all about how fast do they fatigue. So slow twitch takes a little longer to fatigue. They're easily to excite. And once they start to fatigue, then we move on to the first type of fast twitch fiber. And it's a little harder to excite, a little more powerful, but you always have to go through this order. So when you hit the first type of fast twitch, they fatigue in, you know, maybe 2 reps. And when you hit that point of actual momentary muscular fatigue, that point where you can't move the weight concentrically anymore, that's when we're recruiting that most powerful beneficial tissue, increasing our strength, our hypertrophy, our endurance, all of those things, all under one set. That's the most important part, like we were saying about intensity in terms of effort. At that point, you want to give an all-out effort. And I tell my clients at that point, now move as fast as you can. The weight won't move, but they're intentionally trying to move fast, and it won't go anywhere. And that's just my definition of that all-out effort at that point. And then we kind of go back to the traditional trainer that's doing 3 sets of 10. And in this example, nobody's getting close to failure. So they do their first set of 10. Maybe they recruit through their slow twitch, a little bit of their first type of fast twitch. And then they set the weight down. They send 15 text messages or whatever. I mean, I see that on a daily basis.
Right.
And then not let me jump in on the machine. But
anyway, just sit there. Take your time.
Oh, yeah. I know. It kills me. But anyways, they do whatever they do in between sets, and Slow Twitch recovers almost immediately.
Right.
So they set it down, and they go back, and they just re-recruit back through. So they are missing out on at least a third of the potential of fiber that they can actually do, and that's it just happens to be the most important, most beneficial fiber type for getting stronger, gaining muscle size, hypertrophy, or your endurance as well. And I know there's going to be a few people listening that kind of question when I say endurance. Well, 8 to 12 reps, what? You can't get endurance from that. But you actually can, and there's research right out there to show that if you hit failure and you give an all-out effort at that failure, you can do one rep or you can do 100 reps, and it's the same exact output as far as endurance. So it's amazing to do one set and just give a little bit more effort. Just grind through exactly that discomfort. Welcome that discomfort, because you're going to get that same, if not better, benefit out of it. So
yeah, because after that, you're gonna rest for a couple days anyway. I mean, right, just give it all. You don't have to come back the next day,
right?
Because that whole mentality of you have to do, you know, 3 to 5 sets of something, you're not building an inroad to anything. And I think you and I discussed
right
that too. The,
right,
the building of the inroad and starting out slow in the first couple of 2 to 3 reps. Those couple of reps on almost any exercise are the most dangerous, because your muscle doesn't know it's going to push 100 pounds or if it's going to push 1 pound. All it knows is 100% all out effort.
Right.
So that's the difference between, you know, doing the nice and controlled and slow at the very beginning and then trying to give all effort at the end. You're making sure you're recruiting as much muscle fiber as you possibly can. So, right. I mean, that's really important that you hit on that, how that affects like the strength increases. Because I don't think a lot of people realize that. They're like, well, I do 3 to 4 sets, then of course I'm going to get stronger. It's not necessarily true, because you
right
think you're going to have to do more. More is not the answer.
No, it's not. And one of the things we talk to with our clients is, and we talk about it in our strength workouts and also the interval cardio workouts that we do, is following a time intensity or a volume intensity continuum. The more volume you do, the lower the intensity or the amount of effort you put in has to be in order mm-hmm to be able to finish that volume. And the higher the intensity is, the lower the volume is. And that's why we can get a good workout in 20 minutes to 30 minutes. And you feel way more exhausted because you were giving that all-out max effort. So
right. Yeah, in a shorter amount of time. So what else do you have going on? What else are you working on? Any other kind of projects that you want to share with everybody?
Well, we were working on, like we talked about, the a certification for practitioners out there, but I kind of wanted to change that and make it more of value. And now, being a business owner, I've really realized how much time it takes to train employees in. So I'm developing a program, a software, where we can personalize it to specific studios, where it expedites that process for you. So you can have them take these e-learnings and things like that to learn the history and read certain books, answer questions on these books without you having to be specifically present and teaching all of it. So it gives the employer much more time to focus on the business, focus on their clients and all of these things, while on the back end, they're still getting quality training done to their potential employee or their current employee. And by the time they get done with that, they're ready to then continue to shadow and get to the point where they can go face to face with the client comfortably, understand the research, how to talk about it, and how to provide and program specific workouts. Because we're working a lot with injuries and kind of helping people. I don't use the word rehab because it's not really within, you know, our scope of practice, but I lightly use that word, saying, when people come out of physical therapy, they have nowhere to go. They don't understand what to do. And I've really built my business around helping those kind of people. And we're trying to put some videos together so that other trainers can use these videos and understand what to do when someone comes in and says, oh, my rotator cuff or my knee, my ACL. I see so many times in the gym where people just shy away from working these areas when that's not what we want to do. To an extent, yes, but for the most part, we want to actually build the musculature around there in a safe and educated way. And if you don't know how to do it, I definitely don't recommend trying to help these people work through that. And that's where you refer beyond yourself. But I would like to help educate more trainers to be able to help people, because there's a lot more people out there with these chronic injuries and issues than there are of us trainers, which is hard to believe how saturated our industry is.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's one of the biggest projects that I'm focusing on right now is the training that we can specifically brand and get ready for a studio that's willing or wanting something to help expedite their process. And we're hoping to have that. It's going to be probably about a year or so, just based on the timing that I'm able to put into it. And
sure.
The other thing is those videos, and that's going to obviously be a part of the training, so that these new trainers are comfortable training existing clients of an organization, because the trainers already there obviously will have that knowledge, and we want to make sure there's consistency between trainers.
Definitely.
And one of the other things that, I wanted to talk about and bring up, and going back to kind of Discover Strength and Luke Carlson and the team over there, and we kind of talked about this the other day, which I know you got super excited about as well, is the Resistance Exercise Conference, which is coming up in April on the 7th and 8th. It's located this year in at the JW Marriott in the Mall of America. So it's right outside of Minneapolis, right by the airport, actually. And I mean, they got some awesome people here. My personal favorite, I've seen him for a few years now, is James Fisher. I love listening to him talk about the research and that he does. And I know Discover Strength has partnered with him on a lot of different studies and things, and they are going to continue to do so, which is just amazing to me. And I just love talking with him. And it's not that you just sit down and you listen to these speakers go. They have a social, and they have different events where you actually get to sit and talk with these guys and ask them questions about what relates to you and your practice. And I mean, they got Ellington Darden there, Jim Flanagan, and legendary Kim Wood, like we were talking about, you know.
Yeah, these guys are, that's true pioneer and people who really set and laid the groundwork for what we do.
Exactly.
And those guys are
the people that
amazing.
You want to be see and to learn from, definitely.
Yeah, especially this type of intensity of a workout. The way these guys do it, it's not what you'd think it'd be like, right? I mean,
no,
they're not.
You know.
Yeah, it's not like you kind of mentioned the saturation of a training market where you see trainers think they have to make a show out of what they're doing. It's not
exactly
like that at all. It's really, really intense.
Yeah, definitely. It's a great experience.
Well, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to share all of your projects and where you came from and what you did. If you have anything else to add, go for it.
I think we kind of touched on everything, and I just appreciate everyone listening, and you, Eric, for reaching out to me and getting me on the show. I've listened to a few of your podcasts now and read a few of your articles, and I'm going to continue to do so. I just love, like you said, talking about carrying the torch of high-intensity strength training. We aren't willing to let this go. We have to reach out to everybody and pass the word. So
yeah, it needs to be something that continues. And
again,
if you have all this knowledge and you're not going to share it, then what's the point?
So, exactly. I agree.
If people have questions, comments, concerns, where can they reach out to you?
They can reach out to me. My email is tyler@mytitaniumperformance.com. And I mean, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have all of those, and all you got to search is Titanium Performance. We post videos, pictures, articles on a pretty regular basis. And our website is mytitaniumperformance.com.
All right, Tyler, have a great day, and
you
we'll
too,
catch
Eric.
Up with you soon, brother.
All right, sounds good. Thank you very much.